Reading The Unknown Reality by Jane Roberts, Aseth Book, Volume 2. Okay, so this is session 738. It is mostly about house hunting, and so there's only going to be about a page that I'm going to read from this session. And then also I'm going to read session 739 in a sec. Alright, so right here is where Seth talks about the families of consciousness again, breaking off from house information that Jane had actually requested. Alright, so Seth states right here, he says, "I do not want to get into family variations, but Sue Watkins picked up a variation of the Grimata family of consciousness, the Grinar, quite legitimate, and at the time, very good on her part. People love to make divisions. There are then what you can call subfamilies, combinations, highly creative. All divisions are simply for the purpose of organizations of consciousness. The families mix and interrelate so that you could indeed subdivide them. But for my purposes, there is little point to do this. As the physical races mix, so do these psychic ones. Every once in a while, in your terms, a new family forms out of such subgroups. So the families are meant to be understood as general categories into which earth-tuned consciousnesses fall more or less naturally. Reading this section of Unknown Reality, each person should be able to feel an identification with a family. Yet he or she might also find within strong characteristics of another one, in which case the individual is in the same position as someone who is, say, part Irish and part French in physical terms. Now, it is fairly unusual to be half Italian and half Chinese, though it is possible. So some of the psychic families join more easily with certain others, and some who are very sympathetic to each other find it quite difficult to blend. The, quote, natural earth parents, end quote, or the Borlidim, and the Sumare, for instance, are very close, and yet have great difficulty in merging, because one considers the family itself as art, and the other subordinates the family for a different kind of art. Often, they do not even recognize each other as having many of the same characteristics. Okay, now from session 739, I'm only reading a very small section of this session as well. This one is going to have a little bit of information about their house hunting, but it is important information, and you guys might find it interesting. Okay, so page 611. Right here is where I'm going to start. And Seth states, "I mentioned that the air was cleaner on the hill." He's talking about the hill house. They're debating between two specifically at this point, the Foster Avenue house or the Hill House, as they call it. So he's saying, "I mentioned that the air was cleaner on the hill. You will also have another kind of freedom. Your psychic and other creative work will be easier, simply because you will not have others so close to contend with in terms of thought patterns." So if that doesn't say a lot, right? And he goes on, he says, "The fireplace in the Hill House is advantageous, as the one in the house on Foster Avenue would have been, simply in that the open hearth represents an inner source of strength and stability. The open flame, the source of cave heat, is evocative and represents a closeness with the origins of light and life. An open fire elicits certain responses from the cells that, for instance, a furnace does not, The effects of the light plus the warmth on the skin is extremely healing. People sit by a fireplace in wintertime because it is unconsciously recognized that recuperative and therapeutic results occur. Simply put, the cells respond to firelight in somewhat the same manner that flowers do to sunlight. The stimulation is much more than skin deep, however, and an open fire is cleansing. It even helps clear the blood. Cavemen recognize this. I'm not suggesting that you use your fireplace instead of the furnace. I'm saying that in wintertime, there are definite health value effects to be felt when you sit in front of an open fire. 2 evenings a week would be quite effective. The proximity of so many trees also has considerable health value, and to those doing psychic or other creative work, the effects are particularly conducive to a peaceful state of mind. Trees are great users and yet conservators of energy. And they automatically provide much vitality to areas in which they are plentiful. This is physically obvious in scientific terms. Besides that, however, the consciousnesses of trees are remarkably kind and enduring. Now, you think of dogs as friends of man, and you personify gods in human terms. You think of them sometimes as guardians. In those terms now, trees are also guardians. They are attached to the people they know. You cannot put a leash on them and walk them around the block. Yet trees form a protective barrier about, say, a home or a neighborhood. They are actively concerned. They have personalities. Certainly to the same extent that dogs do, yet of an entirely different nature. They respond to you. The trees in that hill house neighborhood then are particularly friendly, strong, and protective, and they will help renew your energies. Okay, so I wasn't gonna read this, but I think I am. So Seth goes on, he says, the air there is drier in a certain way. Now, ocean air is wet, but it is healthy. River air is wet, but it may be healthy or unhealthy according to the nature of the river, the land, and the attitude of the people. After the flood in your area, the river air is felt to be a threat, and to many, it is therefore unhealthy. At some time, I will give you information discussing the reasons why some people, after being flooded in one location, then move to another equally threatening environment. And let me just say right here that if you've read The Nature of Mass Events, a Seth book, it would explain a lot of that and make so much sense. So, another highly recommended book, The Nature of Mass Events. Okay, for this session, post-session notes, I'm only reading two with Seth quotes back here. Session note number four, Rob states, Seth's material here reminded me of a remark he made in the 504th session, presented in the appendix of the Seth material. He was discussing the perceptions of the fetus as mediated by electromagnetic energy units, or EE units, where he stated, quote, cells are not just responsive to light because this is the order of things, but because an emotional desire to perceive light is present, end quote. Session note number five, Rob says, see Seth's discussion of tree consciousness in session 727. Also, note 7 for that session contains excerpts from his tree data in the 18th session. And in the 453rd session. But here's more some more related material from the 18th session, and this is great. So Seth states, quote, "As your body senses temperature changes, so it also senses the psychic charge, not only of other human beings, but also, believe it or not, of animals, and to a lesser extent, of plants and vegetative matter. Your tree builds up a composite of sensations of this sort, sensing not the physical dimensions of a material object, whatever it is, but the vital psychic formation within and about it. The table beside Rupert senses him even as Rupert senses the table. The abilities of the tree are latent in man, as are the abilities of man latent in the tree." End quote by Seth. All right, so that's the end of this session. Here's what I wrote a long time ago, my little notes for this particular next session, 7:40. Okay, so it says infinite selves and the finite selves, blueprints, Christmas lights analogy, identity, prime numbers, going on, go on, what lies between numbers, infinitely, and Jane's altered state, where she sees many Seths around head of a giant quote unquote Seth. And Seth explains. So that will be a really great session. So for those who want to see what Rob defines the next session as, there it is, session 7:40. Just read that. Pretty much what I said, but a little bit less. So yeah, check back for the next video for sure. And as always, thank you for watching.